Memorial Day. A story poem by Alan Hilfiker. Chapter 1. Sunrise. Out of the purling gray, the sun coming low, across the small rounded hills and the trees and the buildings in the distance, then above the fences and the hedges, coming on gradually, yet seeming still, seeming not to move, seeming not to rise. Only time stopped does it rise, imperceptibly does it rise, but inexorably it does rise, lightening the darkness, diluting the darkness, turning darkness gray, melting it slowly, silently, giving birth to shapes, giving birth to colors, bringing on the day. White markers, still gray in the gloaming, rising, rising, out of the dull, out of the dun, out of the gauzy haze, out of the dawning, like torsos, headless, armless, voiceless, ghostly rising, eloquently rising, waking, standing, coming to attention, quietly saluting the arrival of the sun. Chapter 2. Jennifer. She's the first to arrive, like a pilgrim, a lone pilgrim, waiting at the gate, a pilgrim burdened with grief, a pilgrim come to a sacred place, a pilgrim in search of peace, a pilgrim seeking relief, coming to lay her sorrow and a flower, waiting, waiting at the gate, well before the others, waiting there in darkness, waiting with her coffee, her thermos, her coffee growing cold, waiting in the morning chill, waiting for the sun to rise, a sweater draped across her shoulders, sleeves tied once across her chest, backpack hanging from her shoulders, backpack firm and fully stuffed, water for the day, small blanket just to sit on, salad for her lunch, yogurt for a snack, knife and fork and spoon, napkins too, and in her hand, in her rounded fist, a slender wooden stick, a flag upon a stick, still limp and hanging down, no breeze to wave it yet, to spread its red, its white, its blue, the colors of her land, the colors of her man, her country's flag. She's looking up and gazing off, gazing toward the distance, gazing to the east, to where sun will come, the sun still slowly rising, gazing toward the buildings of decisions, where options were discussed and plans were made, and arrows drawn, arrows on a map, circles on a map, circles moved upon a map, circles holding troops, circles meaning troops, individual men, circles holding men, circles shaping fates, individual fates. And once a circle's placed, decisions follow hence, and orders come, and fates are changed, individual fates, fates then moving forth, fates upon a course, something willed to happen, something bound to happen, events that will occur, like risings of the sun, inevitable, like the sun, inevitable and impacting, impacting lives of men, impacting other lives, and making markers rise, markers, stark and white, markers at attention, silently awaiting widows at the gate. Chapter 3. Old Stedman. Slowly he trudges, old Stedman, old Stedman. Stedman out of the guardhouse, keys in his hand, trudging, trudging, shuffling over the lawn, onto the gravel, there by the gate, keys in his hand, old Stedman, looking down at his keys, fingering one, turning it out, out from the ring, out toward the lock, solitary, poised, inserting the key, snug in the lock, perfectly fit, turning it once, hearing it click, takes out the key. Another day. Another day. That's what it is. Just another day. You see it in his eyes, the shuffle of his step, the slouching as he moves. Old Stedman. Just another day, another year. Another set of flags, fresh flags carefully placed, upright, flags at full attention, bolt, upright. Upright and erect, newly planted, ramrod straight, like soldiers at attention, one before each marker, one before each grave, bright colors at attention, bright reds, bright whites, bright blues, bright colors Stedman knows. Knows from years before, knows from many years, knows from fall and winter too, knows from days when flags are picked, when flags are pulled, when flags are pulled from frozen ground, knows from past Decembers, knows that colors fade, the reds, the whites, the blues. Even these, even reds and whites and blues, eventually will fade. Fade with rain, fade with snow, fade like all the others, fade like memory, memory forgotten, memories of men, memories of faces, faces of fathers, fathers long forgotten by children not remembered, names on stone, names that wind and storms and time have worn, names on scrolls no longer read. Fade like yesteryears. So too with coming years, fresh troops rappelling down, fresh troops in dusty towns, from house to house in dusty towns, fresh faces on the ground, fresh boots upon the ground, fresh faces bound for here, fresh colors coming here, with others yet to come, replacements yet to come, next wave of troops, troops rappelling down, replacing those replaced, and then themselves replaced. And so the cycle goes, this old Stedman knows. Knows the flags will fade, fade and be replaced. New sets of flags will come each year, like all the prior years, year on year on year. This old Stedman knows. Now at the gate. He pockets keys, old Stedman pockets keys, left pocket as he always does, looks up and sees her there. Old Stedman looks and sees her there. He smiles and sees her there, sees Jennifer standing there, sees her waiting, calm and poised, waiting to come in, sees her smile returning his and knows exactly who she is. Knows her story well, knows her story all too well, knows not her name, but knows her grief, her loss, her pain. She, like all the others, all those who've come before, all those who've gone before, he sees her pain, knows well her pain. He sees it in her eyes, the pain she shares, the wives, the lovers, the widows all those he's seen before, all those who've passed his gate, just like the flags. Fresh sets of wives, fresh sets of grief, arrive each year, arrive each spring of green, each spring of black, always there in black, standing there like flags, like silent standing flags, waiting to get in. Slowly marching in spring, marching in time of green, marching in black. Old Stedman nods, a nod that is a bow that is respect. He bows and smiles, a withered smile, a knowing smile, a smile that knows her pain, a smile that knows her sorrow, a smile that knows her grief. Old Stedman knows her grief. Old Stedman had a son. a son who had a smile, a son now just a photograph, a photo on his mantle, a smiling son, now framed upon his mantle, a son in uniform, a son with helmet under arm, his helmet at his side, ready to put on, ready for a war, ready for a bullet, ready for a call by officers, a call that stops you cold, a knock upon your door, officers at your door, the faces telling all, a folded flag in hand, their silence telling all, a pounding of your heart. No, it cannot be. A smiling son, a helmet he'll put on, a life, a son who had a life, a son now just a photograph, a son upon a mantle. He knows her pain. Old Stedman knows her pain. Old Stedman has his own just now recalled. He looks at her, and she at him. He nods and swings the gate. It scrapes upon the gravel, fans out the tiny stones, quarter-circled stones, opens wide the gate they'll all come through, all those who follow her, and Jennifer now comes in. Old Stedman nods, old Stedman smiles, and Jennifer now comes in. Chapter 4, 609-834. She walks down an aisle between rows of white stones, stones like the flags, all at attention, stones at attention, upright, erect, equally spaced. So too the rows, equally spaced, each row in measured place, each stone in measured place, each stone erect in measured place, each stone erect and numb, each stone white, stark and numb, each with a number and name, a name and two dates, rank, service, and town, a town and a state. Chiseled in stone, stark data, no face. And row after row, she counts all the rows as she walks down the aisle. 46, 47. His row is 60. And remembers a time, a bright summer day, also in May, a door open wide, the door to her church, her father beside, right by her side, he in a tux, a rented black tux, smiling but stiff. She feels his tight arm. The organ begins. They enter the church and walk down the aisle, walk past the rows, slowly past rows, rows also with shapes, shapes upright and straight, tall, upright and straight, upright and smiling. To her, just a blur. She's smiling too, her radiant best, all the way smiling, down the aisle, smiling, row after row, all the long way, with nods to a few, finally the cousins, the uncles and aunts, grandma and mom, standing, erect, the organ still playing, her father still there, still at her side. Then he steps back. She's now alone, alone at the altar. Then through her veil she sees him, right there, there at the altar, him, standing there, smiling and tall, straight, handsome and tall, him standing there, number 609-834, him standing there, looking at her, waiting for her, he waiting for her, smiling at her, straight, upright and tall, looking at her, she looking at him, she smiling too, a tear down her cheek. She brushes it off. Now, too, on her cheek, she feels a warm tear, a tear that she leaves, a tear on her cheek that she doesn't brush off as she walks down this aisle, this time alone. No music this time. No organ this time. No cousins this time. No uncles and aunts. No grandma. No mom. No father beside. This time alone. No longer in white. This time in black. She walks down this aisle now of grass, past row after row, past silence of stones, a blur of white stones, till six zeros reached, row six zeros reached.
Right, haste!
Sergeant would shout. That's what he'd yell, and then they'd all turn to the right. Their column would turn to the right, all at one time, precise like a clock, like the hands of a clock. All at one time, they'd turn on the spot, turn at the shout, as if all were linked, crisp and precise. Turn on the spot, Tom and his squad, all at one time, like the hands of a clock. So too, she turns now to the right, not sharply, not crisply, not like a clock. She rather slowly, sad with head down, stops for a moment, now brushes her cheek, wipes off the tear that she'd left, now wipes off that tear and moves down his row, past other stones, past other flags, then comes to the one near the end, the second to last, waiting for her, plain and erect, inscribed with his name and his rank, his town and his state and his dates, stark, simple and plain, name, rank, and his dates, town, service, and state. No organ this time, no music this time, not smiling this time. Just silence this time, silence and stone. White silence and stone waiting for her. Plain and erect, white and erect, white at attention, 609-834, silently waiting for her. White and erect, waiting for her, silent, erect, silently waiting, number 609-834. Chapter 5. The Vigil. She stops there and pauses, stands for a moment, looks down at his stone, reading his name, reading his dates, tears blurring the letters, blurring the numbers. She brushes them off, flexes her shoulders, the backpack slides off. She sets it down gently, down on the grass, beside the cold stone, takes out her water, a moist paper towel, unwraps the towel, takes out a flower, a single carnation, the brightest of reds, to place on the stone, cold top of the stone. She sits gently down, straightens her dress, heaves a deep sigh, wipes off a tear, takes off her sandals, head down on her knees, hair spilling down, dark, sheening black, matching her dress, dark hair spilling down, veiling her knees, right arm with two bracelets, clasping her knees. Freshly mowed grass, moist on her toes, scented with spring, verdant and cool, moist on her toes, cool on her toes. The flag, his little flag, limp on its staff, catches a breeze, roused by the breeze, slowly unfurls, ripples, unfurls, welcoming her, uncurls from its staff, shows her its colors, the red, white, and blue, then gathers again, furls once again, coils on its staff, another soft breeze, it ripples again. Once again it spreads, welcoming her, brushes her shins, strokes softly her shins, ripples and coils, catches a breeze, spreads colors again. Softly it waves, waves in the breeze, the cool morning breeze, whisking, caressing, flag brushing her knees, caressing her knees, like Tom reaching out, Tom touching her knees, a welcome caress, flag touching her knees. Head bowed, immobile, she silently sits. A long time she sits. An occasional tear, an occasional sigh. She silently sits. A long time she sits. The cool morning breeze wafting her hair, dark strands of hair, touching her knees, joining Tom's touch, soft on her knees.
Why, God? Why? Why, my dear Tom?
Silence persists, an occasional tear.
He didn't have to go. I begged him not to join. We could have had a little boy with golden curls. Please, tell me why. Please, God, tell me why. There must have been a reason. Pastor says there's always reasons. Says there's always reasons. All things happen for a reason. That is what he says. But what could be the reason? Please tell me, what's the reason? Please, God, tell me why.
Thoughts spilling through her mind. Turning, spilling, tumbling. Once again returning, returning yet again. Old thoughts, ever yet recurring. Constantly recurring, coming once again. Kaleidoscopic thoughts, thoughts searching for the reason. Head bowed, resting on her knees, a sob, a tear, another sob, another tear she wipes away.
The first time at his parents before he went to war, a Sunday afternoon, a Sunday after church, smiles and roasted chicken, all gathered round the table, laughter, apple pie. An opera playing softly, Puccini's La Boheme, and afterwards a tour throughout their home. His mother leads the way, Tom walking at my side. His mother points to photographs and leads us to his room that's still intact, exactly as it was, exactly as he left it, going off from high school. His pennants on the wall, his sweater with a V, exactly as he left it, off to join the army, enrolling at West Point. And now it's just a shrine his mother keeps, his mitt from Little League, a picture of his team, a picture of his collie, a collie he named Rex, the mounted frame of arrowheads, his Eagle Scout Award, a wall of framed diplomas, one that says cum laude, a cross above his bed, a cross and withered palm, Palm Sundays, withered palm, a withered palm from year-long past, a palm upon a cross, a resurrection palm.
Thoughts, scattered thoughts, jumbled thoughts, kaleidoscopic thoughts, thoughts tumbling through her mind, turning, spinning, tumbling. Kaleidoscopic thoughts, once again, recurring.
Our first apartment near the base, kitchen table, matching chairs, bought from those deployed, friendly neighbors, neighbors with a bond that's not discussed, a bond that's felt, but not discussed, a bond that's known, not talked about, a bond when leaves are up, when orders come, orders to deploy.
Another tear. Another tear that courses down her cheek, one that's not wiped off, one spilling on her dress.
The night I broke a dinner plate, best china dinner plate, his sister's wedding gift, I cried and cried, was so ashamed. He only smiled, held my hand.
It's just a plate, he said.
The night he came home with the news, I only heard two words. Deploy, Afghanistan. a visit from two officers. Officers at the door.
Two silent standing officers, a flag, and their condolences, their practiced, deepest sympathies. A letter from the president. A letter with Tom's name, spelled wrong. A form. A printed stamp for signature.
Weeks later, in a grocery store back home, I'd gone to get some things for Mom. Eggs, flour, butter, milk. Simple things like milk. Things like baking soda, like sponges for the sink. Simple things. And there coming toward me, coming down the aisle.
Coming toward me, down the aisle, a mother with a child. A little boy with curly hair, curly golden hair, golden curly hair. Curly hair like Tom's, golden hair like Tom's when he was two. A little boy like Tom, like Tommy's picture in a frame, at home upon the mantelpiece, his parents' mantelpiece. This little boy, this replica of Tom, this little boy who reaches out to grab a jar of applesauce, a jar of applesauce.
Thoughts spilling through her mind, visions, dreams, snippets of the past, snippets of the future, a future that won't be. Dreams tumbling through her mind.
A little boy with curly hair, an open Corvette, a youth in cap and gown, a youth with curly hair, curly golden hair, old couple on a porch with rocking chairs, the back seat of a Thunderbird, kisses, long and passionate, clearing breakfast dishes, hiking up a trail, standing on a porch, looking toward the street, a school bus in the street, a school bus at their driveway, and children getting on, one with golden hair, curly, golden hair.
Snippets of a future not to be, a future that won't come, visions, dreams, tumbling visions, visions of a dream that will not be.
A nursing home, stale and overheated rooms, moans from open doors, doors to other rooms. He wheeling her, she wheeling him, which one would it be? Which fate that will not be? Which one that will not be? She wasn't sure. Perhaps more children, perhaps more golden curly hair, perhaps some children never born. Never wheeling her.
It fell and shattered, smashed and splashed, the jar of applesauce, the little boy with curly golden hair. He knocked it down, the little boy, like Tom, knocked down the jar of applesauce that spilled upon the floor, shards of glass and contents oozing on the floor, the applesauce all oozing from the shattered glass. All sticky on the floor, the mother swung and smacked her son and yelled and shook him hard, the son with curly hair, the little boy with golden curly hair. Jennifer turned away and thought,
"Oh, don't do that. Please, don't do that. You don't know how you're blessed. Please, don't do that. If only you could know, if only you just knew how lucky that you are, how lucky that you are to have a little son with golden hair, with curly golden hair, a son I'll never have."
Chapter 6, 10:30 a.m. Across the way, across the stones, all the marble upright stones, the marble white and upright stones, stones erect and at attention. At attention with their flags, the flags so slowly curling, curling in the breeze, curling, furling, furling and unfurling, unfurling in the breeze, so softly comes the notes, the solemn calling notes, clear and fresh and pure, pure like morning bird song just at dawn, rising, rising over stones, rising over rows, rising over ranks. rows of ranked white stones, regiments of stones. Rising come the notes, notes from golden horns, sun-warm golden horns, trumpets clear, forlorn, notes which are the prelude, prelude to the speeches, speeches soon to come, notes from close at hand, that seem from far away, that seem from distant hills, perhaps from distant clouds, perhaps from skies beyond, notes from navy band, notes which are a call, notes like sonneries, notes which beckon all to come, notes which beckon silence, beckon all to silence, and silence then ensues. She hears the notes, she hears the call, she hears the notes from far away, the notes which seem so distant, as if from shores far off. She hears these notes, she hears the call, and sees the shuffling shapes, the others gathering now, shuffling toward the call. Soon there will be wreaths, soon there will be speeches, wreaths and speeches, people gathering now, their shapes now moving past, blurs, blurs of silent shapes, a silent blur of shapes, a solemn blur of shapes, shapes in steadfast flow, drawn by trumpet's call. Soon there will be wreaths, the laying down of wreaths, wreaths for unknown soldiers, soldiers of so many wars, long past forgotten wars, so many wars long past. The laying down of wreaths, taps, and then the speeches, taps, and then the speeches. Chapter 7, 11 a.m. And so, ladies and gentlemen, veterans, children, honored guests, Senator Breckinridge, whom we just heard, in honor and to commemorate those who made the ultimate sacrifice for our country and our flag, our nation owes a debt to its fallen heroes that we can never fully repay, but we can honor their sacrifice.
Why, God? Why? Why, my dear Tom?
To our national sanctuary, this most hallowed ground, to commemorate Memorial Day. The grief so many of you carry in your hearts is a grief I cannot fully know. The venerable warriors that slumber here knew full well the risks that are associated with military service and felt pride in defending our democracy. The true lesson of this sacred, hallowed ground is that each headstone is that of a patriot. We memorialize our first patriots, blacksmiths and farmers, slaves and freedmen, who never knew the independence they won with their lives. We memorialize the armies of men and women disguised as men black and white, who fell in apple orchards and cornfields in a war that saved our Union. What bonds us chained together across the generations, this chain of honor and sacrifice, is not only a common cause, our country's cause, but also a spirit captured in a book of Isaiah, a familiar verse, "And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then I said, Here am I, send me." They and we are the legacies of an unbroken chain of proud men and women who served their country with honor, who waged war so that we might know peace, who braved hardship so that we might know opportunity, who pay the ultimate price so we might know freedom. I have no illusions about what little I can add now to the silent testimony of those who gave their lives willingly for their country. Words are even more feeble on this Memorial Day, for the sight before us is that of a strong and good nation that stands in silence and remembers those who were loved and who, in return, loved their countrymen enough to die for them.
Why, God? Why? Why? Why?
Chapter 8, 3:52 p.m. They've gone now. Gone. All the people gone. The crowds, the generals, dignitaries, gone. Senators and congressmen, all of them have gone. The cleanup crew, all gone. Microphones and speakers, podium, platform, all of these are gone. Even all the banners, all of these are gone. All except the chairs. She sits alone, alone in back. Jennifer sits alone, the last row, all alone. Her knapsack at her feet. Now she wears her sandals. No grass between her toes. Jennifer sits alone, staring straight ahead. She's staring straight ahead, but seeing not a thing. Staring but not seeing. Staring toward a distance she can't see.
Why, God? Why?
Old Stedman wanders by. He takes a chair that's too removed from hers, and he too stares ahead. The minutes pass, and neither speaks. Old Stedman glances at his watch. He glances at his watch and thinks, "It's nearly 4 o'clock, an hour yet before I close." He straightens, stands, and pats her arm. "It's hard, I know," he says. "The first year, most of all." She looks at him and hesitates, not certain what to say. She searches deep within his eyes, regards his wrinkled brow, regards his withered face, then gives a smile, a little smile, a trusting little smile. "I wish they'd told me why. I wish they'd tell me why." "I know, I know," is his reply. "I think sometimes there is no reason why. I think sometimes they shouldn't bother try." She looks at him, his craggy, wrinkled face, looks deep within his eyes, the wells which are his eyes. Seconds pass. They hold each other's stare. She searching, reaching with her stare. Then she drops her eyes. Old Stedman pats her arm again, then turns and walks away, then slowly walks away. Old Stedman walks away. Chapter 9, 5:15 p.m. Old Stedman sees her coming toward his gate, tired, wan. Her face is drawn, her gaze is down, her flag held limply at her side.
"Long day," he says. "You were the first, and now I see the last."
She then looks up and stares at him, again, unsure just what to say. Old Stedman helps her out.
"Brother? Husband? Friend?"
"Husband,"
she replies.
"Iraq? Afghanistan?"
"Afghanistan."
"For me, a son," he says while looking down. "He's over there, in 58, in Section 58. I see him every day."
She stops, wonders, 58. What war is that? Where's 58? Old Stedman reads her face.
58? That's Desert Storm. Just one block up and left Afghanistan.
Marines?
No, Army, not Marines.
My Tom was in the Army, a captain from West Point.
Your first year here?
Yes.
I figured that.
How did you know?
Oh, I guess it's just the years. You see them come through all the years. You see them come and go. You see the signs, the common signs. And you just know. I guess that's it. You see the signs and kind of know.
She pauses. Then looks back to where she's been, to where she'd spent the day. The day in Section 60.
Then she turns and looks at him. Looks at him again. Looks at him with sadness in her eyes. Sad, beseeching, pleading eyes.
I came to find the answer. The answer as to why. He was so good, so young and good. We had such hope, so many plans. I came to find out why.
Old Stedman pauses, scuffs the gravel, looks past her far away.
There's much I do not know, he says. Much I cannot put in words. Much I cannot say. For many years I've heard their words and listened to their speeches. I've heard them try and try and try. Again this year they tried.
He pauses, drops his eyes, and looks down at his feet.
I've heard their words for countless years. For countless years I've heard them try. They do their best to put in words the things that words can never say, the thoughts that words cannot convey. They do their best to find those words, but never do they quite express the feelings that we feel, emotions hard to say, the grief, the sadness, tragic loss, all that's buried here, the silence of these stones, the weight of all these stones, a depth and distance we can't reach. I give them credit every year for what they try to do, for what they try to say, but never do they quite express what we yearn to hear, what remains unsaid, the ache for those who fell, for futures never lived, young lives forever dead. And I can't tell you why. I only know our country called. I only know they all were young. The rest I cannot say. I cannot tell you why. Then old Stedman pauses and reaches to his chest, shirt pocket on his chest, pocket just above his heart, and takes a paper out, a folded piece of paper, an aging, wrinkled paper, a paper he holds close. I cannot tell you why, he says. For me, Walt Whitman says it well. As well as I have ever heard, perhaps as well as can be said. For me, he says it well. He reaches out and hands a tattered page to her, the words Walt Whitman wrote. Jennifer takes the page and reads.
Pensive on her dead gazing. Pensive on her dead gazing, I heard the mother of all. Desperate on the torn bodies, on the forms covering the battlefields, gazing. As the last gun ceased, but the scent of the powder smoke lingered, as she called to her earth with mournful voice while she stopped. Absorb them well, O my earth, she cried. I charge you, lose not my sons, lose not an atom. And you streams, absorb them well, taking their dear blood. And you local spots, and you airs, that swim above lightly impalpable, and all you essences of soil and growth, and you my river's depths, and you mountainsides, and the woods where my dear children's blood trickling reddened, and you trees down in your roots to bequeath to all future trees, my dead absorb, or south or north, my young men's bodies absorb, and their precious, precious blood, which holding in trust for me faithfully back again, give me many a year hence. In unseen essence and odor of surface and grass centuries hence, in blowing airs from the fields back again, give me my darlings, give my immortal heroes, exhale me them centuries hence, breathe me their breath, let not an atom be lost. O years and graves, O air and soil, O my dead and aroma sweet, exhale and perennial sweet death, years, centuries hence. She purses then her lips and hands him back the page, hands him back the tattered page,
Old Stedman nods, holds up the page, returns it to his pocket. Then he says, Old Stedman says,
A mother gave it to me once many years ago. Vietnam, I think it was. Yes, that was it. Her son was Vietnam. I keep it folded in my shirt and read it often while I work. It gives me comfort, helps me carry on, helps me do my job.
Jennifer listens, studies him, then nods and gazes off. She nods again, but doesn't speak. Old Stedman pats her arm once more. Then he too nods and moves away and shuffles toward the gate. She straightens, follows him. He knows they'll meet again. He knows they'll meet next year.
Notes. 1. This poem was inspired by a photograph on the front page of the New York Times, May 31, 2010. It should be noted that the photo was of a woman in front of her husband's gravestone at Arlington National Cemetery. My story, poem, while based upon the photo and certain traditions which occur annually at Arlington, is totally fictional. The names are of people who, to my knowledge, do not exist. The character, Old Stedman, certainly does not exist. The gateway, where Jennifer waited in the morning and exited in the evening, does not exist. The gravel stones at the gateway do not exist, and there are probably no fold-up chairs placed as extra seats for the speeches. These are all things that do not exist at such a dignified and formal place as Arlington, but they seem to fit my story poem, so I use them. And while the photo was of Arlington, and many aspects of the story poem were adapted from Arlington, I deliberately did not mention the name Arlington in the story poem, as I was striving to make it more general. My intent was to have it be any cemetery which honors and respects the graves of those who fought and died for our country and our freedom, and perhaps more importantly, for those who grieve for their loved ones, for their own losses, and who ask the unanswerable question, why, God, why? 2, the quotations on pages 49 to 52 were from Memorial Day speeches at Arlington National Cemetery. The first quotation was from the first official commemoration. The next several were speeches by presidents Reagan in 1982 and Obama in 2009 and 2011. 3, the Bible verse on page 51 is from Isaiah 6:8. Of the Revised Standard Version of the Bible, 1952. 4, the Walt Whitman poem entitled Pensive on Her Dead Gazing was taken from Leaves of Grass, W.W. Norton & Company, Inc., New York, 1965, pages 498 through 499.